morning, and thank you very much for being punctual. Thank you, everybody. I would like to welcome the heritage agency which is with us today. And there is some history, from what I've read, there is quite a long history between between NPT and South African Heritage. And of course, it's obvious because of its various activities we engage in when it comes to heritage. And also, tourism is and should be involved in bringing tourists to the heritage site. And we thank you for coming. I am Peter Tuabo, a member of this committee, and the other members will introduce themselves, but on my right is Simutu Kuzwayo, on my left is Jerry Kutina. He is the secretary and he is the content advisor.
Thank you, Jefferson. My name is Greg Kumbach. I represent the Different Cape Alliance from
Good morning, my name is Paul Scott. I'm the TA spokesperson on tourism and I'm from the Western Cape province.
Good morning, everyone. I am Embalang Kaiko from the Eastern Cape province, deployed by the African National Congress to the committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Manuku Masihela, member of this committee deployed by the African National Congress from Limpopo. Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Patricia Adams. I'm from the Northern Cape, and I'm deployed here by the ANC.
Morning, everyone. My name is Asala Machobin from the ESF. I'm the member of this committee from the Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Bongin Tui. I'm the researcher for the committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Commissioner Governor. I'm from Parliament Communication Services.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Sean Nato. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer for Minister Heinekoff.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Pia Panita. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer for the Director General of Tourism.
Thank you very much. Ms. Padoza, can you introduce your team, please?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. I'm Wendy Sotkinsa. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the South African Heritage Resources Agency. I've got a team of three colleagues that I've invited to come and assist with presentation to the Bogotá Committee. And with your permission, Chairperson, I'll ask you to introduce themselves. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Kathy Mukusi. I am the Chief Financial Officer.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Lindy Malkas. I'm the Company Secretary.
Good morning, ma'am and honorable members. My name is Gregory Onto. I'm the Manager of Sora Building Township.
Good morning, Jefferson and honorable members. My name is Thabo Malebi and I'm with the National Department of Tourism, responsible for heritage and cultural tourism.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Nisha Biyachi and I'm from South African Tourism, the Global Manager for Product.
Can we have the people at the back?
Morning, everybody. It's Ismail Hussain from PMG.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Johan Peterson, winemaker from Rainbows and Matuba Wines.
Thank you. Jerry, are there any apologies?
We have received three apologies, Chairperson. One from Honorable Mabulela Mashele, the second one from Honorable Bekwa, the third one from Honorable Woodford.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. We have been invited to present to the committee on the importance of heritage sites in tourism development, and we've been guided in our in the correspondence that we received from honorable chair and members
in terms of the areas that we need to be focusing on. We appreciate the opportunity to Jefferson, as you have indicated in your introduction. We have a long history of collaboration and relationship with the Department of Tourism. I will outline briefly and present to the committee on a number of areas, especially the related to heritage sites, or what we would like to refer to as heritage courses, because it's not just sites that we are looking after, we're also looking after objects and underwater cultural heritage as well. So the purpose is therefore to present to the committee of the importance of heritage sites in tourism development. Just a brief history about who we are, Jefferson, just to recap that we are a Schedule 3A public entity established in terms of the National Heritage Resources Act, number 25 of 1999, and our critical role is towards identification, conservation, protection, and promotion of our heritage resources for to enjoy them as we live, but also for future generations. Jefferson, I would also like to indicate that we did send a presentation before, but we just noticed that there was a slight error, but mine not major. Hence, we had them presented today. It's the same presentation. It has not changed. We just changed, I think Robin and I, we said it's clear again, and then we changed that to reflect the position of an island. Our vision as an entity, Jefferson, is to ensure that heritage is utilized towards building a united nation. We are confident of the fact that heritage is indeed a critical element of nation building and social cohesion. And we have been engaged with the Department of Arts and Culture, we are an entity of the Department of Arts and Culture, in developing strategic outcomes that are the goals that are oriented towards a strategic the strategic position and trust that we are going to be looking at in the next 5 years, and one of which is critical, is ensuring social cohesion through our heritage resource management, as well as upliftment of the social and communities. We believe strongly, Jefferson and other members, that communities in the areas where the heritage sites are should actually benefit. So we are strongly advocating for the economic transformation through heritage resources management. In terms of the Act, we are enjoined to identify the heritage resources of cultural significance. The Act does allow any member of society to identify and bring forward a proposal for a site or an object to be declared as a heritage resource. So we have a lot of process is not too many that one has to go through in order for one to identify the site. A recent case in point was a member of the community alerting us to an area in the city called Kofro that they wanted us to look into because they believe that it is gradually losing its status as a heritage resource. So those are the types of queries that we get from communities as well, and we appreciate the fact that we do receive communities taking interest in the management of heritage resources. We also are responsible to ensure that the resource that has been identified, the heritage resource that has been identified, is conserved. So upfront, before we can create a heritage resource, we need to have a conservation management plan so that we are aware of how this resource is going to be conserved so that it remains for generations. But also that conservation management plan informs how it at what intervals we should go and look, because as part of our mandate we do have a responsibility to inspect the heritage resources. So we would be guided by the conservation management plan in terms of how the community or the custodian of that particular heritage resource look after it. But also through our declaration of the sites, then we protect them. Sometimes we provide provisional protection while we are going through other administrative processes to declare a heritage resource as such. What we have acknowledged, Honorable Chair and Miller, that we are lagging behind, which we need to strengthen, is to promote our heritage resources. We are enjoined by the Act to ensure that
these resources that are declared are promoted so that people are aware about them, both nationally and also internationally. As members may be aware, we also do have heritage sites that have been declared as national or world heritage sites. How are they governed, these heritage resources? We have got three tiers in terms of the management of heritage resources. There is a national sphere of governance and management of heritage resources, which we as the South African Heritage Resource Agency are responsible for. So if a site is of national significance, then we are responsible for its management. At the provincial level, there are those heritage resources that are provincial significance. And then the NEC of culture and sport in various provinces should then ensure that those provinces have a provincial heritage resources authority whose mandate would then be to manage and safeguard the provincial heritage resources. And then at local level, we do also have heritage resources that are of local level significance, which then are, in terms of the Act, managed by the local municipality or local authority. So those are the three spheres of governance of heritage resources. I must add, Honourable Chairman and members, that our predecessor was the National Women's Council, which has been existing since 2000 as an agency. During that transition, all the heritage resources were deemed provincial heritage resources, and the provinces were given 5 years to look at what they have and let and declare those as of national status as national heritage resources, bring those to us. So we do have that process that still needs to be finalized because they are lagging behind in terms of organization of that process. The heritage resources that we are enjoined by the Act to manage and look after citizen and vulnerable range from, as I indicated, objects of cultural significance. I will go through some of the objects. The example, for instance, that you've got there is the Prosper Bidwell. That Prosper Bidwell is housed in the Walter Sisulu University in Mthatha, and it showcases the culture of the Abatembu. It's a brilliant and beautiful collection that we have protected, and I think on the 19th of June we have declared as a heritage. That collection we have declared as a heritage object. So it's protected and it's housed in Walter Sisulu. It tells the story of the people of Abatembu, their culture and their tradition. We also have basic buildings and structures that of cultural significance that we look after. We also have areas and oral traditions. For instance, we have just declared the Mujaji dynasty, for instance, as a heritage resort. Last year in December, we built a memorial in Limpopo to celebrate the Mujaji dynasty, with regards to intangible heritage of brain making. We also have historical settlements that we create. We are currently working closely with the community of businesses to declare the area as a heritage resource. We also have certain graves and burial grounds, as referred to, that we also create the concentration camps are also part of that graves and burial grounds unit that looks after those heritage resources. But also quite importantly, we do have underwater cultural heritage. We've got about 2,400 shipwrecks along our coastline that we then are enjoined to look after. That is at a national level. We don't have shipwrecks at provincial level. So we do that the heritage resources that is under national management. Same as the heritage objects, and they are under the management of us, the South African Heritage Resources Agency. The next slide that talks to the varied heritage resources that we are managing, in different ranging from objects through to sites of significance and also the real global ground. But also, if I mean, as the entity, when I indicated from our predecessors and the management since we inherited a portfolio of properties, heritage properties, that were due to the state, or bequeathed to the state, which we are looking after.
We've got about 36 of those properties across about 8 provinces, and we are enjoying in terms of the act to ensure that we look after those properties. The barriers around, I think there's a grave site in Simonstown of what family is that? Grave site. But there's a vault in Simonstown that we're looking after. There are also open spaces. There's a farm in Diversified that we're looking after. Yeah, there's the Hugo family that is in Simonstown. There's also a site in Tubach, an open space in Tubach that we're looking after. So we've got those six properties as the entities that we have to look after. In terms of our functions, Honorable Chair, remember that as I've alluded, we are a national entity, therefore we need to provide the enabling environment through legislation and through regulations, through policies and standards. That will inform the management of heritage resources. We provide professional advice. We've got experts like Mr. Antong in our midst who provide guidance in terms of the built environment. His specialty is built environment. But we also have a manager who are looking at specifically under water cultural heritage. We've got those that look after caves, archaeologists that look after caves for us. So we've got a range of professionals that we have appointed that assist us. But most importantly, we also are looking at promoting education and training in the fields of heritage resource management, because it really is not a career of choice at this point. So we'd like to promote it. During the youth day, for instance, we had our exhibition there where we were encouraging young ones to take up studies and aspire to become heritage professionals. We are also working with the Department of Basic Education. The Antong, for instance, has given a talk in one of the schools to promote heritage resources management as a career, and also our heritage, just for the young ones to be alerted to the heritage resources and want to take selfies from a heritage site. So we would like to promote heritage resources. And also a big part of our function, Honorable Chairperson, is to work with to safeguard our heritage through issuing permits when developers would like to work, especially in areas like in Bukoba where there's a lot of money, they must do a heritage impact assessment. And the Department of Mineral Resources is working closely with us, and also the Department of Environmental Affairs, so that in the country economically, we do not find ourselves disrupting the heritage. So what happens then, if any company is involved in development, then they have to make sure that in whatever area that they would like to excavate, they do a heritage impact assessment and what appoint qualified archaeologists and heritage specialists, and they submit those to us. And we go through, as I indicated, we have experts as well in our organization that go through those applications so that we can then say yay or nay in terms of EV development. But also we do conduct site inspections so that where a heritage site has been declared, as I indicated, has been protected, every now and again we go and have a look to see the status of that. For instance, we've just been to Makaban Valley and we are pleased with what happened today in terms of the Limpopo Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. They have stabilizes the walkway which was falling apart so that tourists can enjoy that venue that is rich, that cave that is rich with history. So those are some of the things that we do as Chairperson. We, as I alluded to that slide, I spoke a lot on that slide in terms of what we do. There was a question that was raised in terms of responsible for signage. Whilst we have 3 tiers of management of heritage resources, strictly speaking, all of us are situated in some municipalities, whether they are managed by us as national heritage sites or managed by the province as provincial heritage sites, but their location would be in a specific municipality. So it becomes critical, therefore, that we work closely with the municipalities to ensure that we do have proper signage to those heritage sites. What we have been, for instance, now, we're developing and upgrading the grave of Dr. James Moga. And as part of that process, we have ensure that there must be a signage that shows people that this leads to the heritage site, which is the base site of Dr. Morocco. I must admit that Chepison, it's not, it's something that, it's an area that needs to be improved so that people can be drawn to the heritage site. It's just repatriated, reburied, and declared graves, for instance, of Moses Kotai and J.B. Marks in the Northwest Service. And we have not put in signage that says so that people can be attracted towards that site. So it's one area that we really need to improve on, and we have acknowledged that now. Even when we were in Hamatala village on Monday, where we were commemorating Makwena Machal, the first woman to be banished in the apartheid government. But we have not put any signage to lead people to, so that they can go and experience that cultural landscape within the Hamatala village. In terms of transformation, Honourable Chair and members, the Minister of Arts and Culture on the 17th of April called for a meeting with all the relevant stakeholders to look at transforming the heritage landscape. And the Minister has then set up a task team that is going to assist him in towards transforming the heritage landscape. We acknowledge that in our 21 years of democracy, we have done much to transform the heritage landscape so that it reflects the history of all the citizens of the country. We are in the process of engaging and doing that. We also, as I've indicated, that we are mindful of the fact that we don't have a body of heritage practitioners from where to go when we need to promote heritage resources and heritage resource management. What we have done, Chairperson, is set up an information system, South African Heritage Resources Information System. And we have a website, we call it the service, and it assists people to be able to locate where is what a heritage resource. But we also are mindful of the fact that when we look at it in, I don't have the slide, that geographic information system, there's still a lot of areas in South Africa that have not been captured and populated onto the system, so that people can, those who have access to websites, can go and log on and experience what we have and have a sense of what cultural resources we have across the country. We have that on a project supported by the Department of Arts and Culture to start transforming our heritage landscape to rehabilitate and construct memorials of our founding mothers of the Muslims. And I say that we have also not neglected our founding mothers. We had worked on the graves of the Rahima Musas, the graves of the Charlotte Matrekes, and they have indicated recently the grave of Mem Makwena Machala. So we are working towards that. We've got a number of also women that we would like to celebrate and commemorate. So we constructing the memorial, we work very closely with the provincial government and the local government, as and when we enter into any particular province towards ensuring that we are erecting the memorial. In terms of sites that have been declared, this is just it's not an indication of all the heritage sites that we have in the country. It's just an indication of what we have declared as heritage sites and created as heritage sites and objects within the immediate it's not an exhaustive list. As I said, in the studies, case for instance, the manager of the archaeology and paleontology of the city, or tell me that there's a thousand of cases in the country that can be either at a national level, a provincial level, or local level. I know that we are working on the Bundesworth case, the Northern Cape, for instance, where we would like to start like a walkway so that people can enjoy it. And those are some of the projects that are working. As far as this development is concerned, just ensuring that we increase the pool and also capacitate those who are already in the field. We did have a program that we worked with the Rose University, which took practitioners who are already in the field and empowered them further or capacitated them further. We also had a new skills development program that we are really attached to. and Institute in Porto. But we also had youth alliance programs on specifically targeting underwater cultural heritage as honorable members and chairperson. But we also participate in the Robben Island is collaborated with the University of the Western Cape and University of Cape Town to run a course around heritage resources management. So those are some of the course skills development programs that we have participated in. We acknowledge the fact that there's very little courses in the country that one could go there, want to be a heritage practitioner. Normally they go through the other fields of archaeology, of paleontology, of what you're of town planning and engineering, and then I would imagine by default they end up enjoying a heritage and then working in our field. So we would like to have a, like for instance, we don't have underwater archaeologists specifically on underwater cultural heritage training in the country. You become an archaeologist and then you then come aboard and then start working and be interested in underwater. Whereas in other parts of the world, they do offer courses on specifically archaeologists that are going to work on underwater cultural heritage. We do take part in the World Convention Committee that assists with the management of our World Heritage Sites. We do collaborate with the Department of Tourism. Greg has been very instrumental in that front on the heritage tourism strategy, and I've added to the heritage management system that we are proud of. We continue to declare and identify sites, chairperson and honorable members, so that we increase our heritage resources in the country, but also with a view to ensure that they reflect the broad spectrum of South African citizenship. We also collaborate with other heritage bodies, for instance, in the Western Cape. We collaborate in the Cape Town Heritage Trust with a trust which was a structure that was erected to house the remains that were found during some form of a development that was taking place in Cape Town. So we're working very closely with the whole range of other heritage bodies, but also in collaboration with the government departments, especially the Department of Public Works, which is a custodian of the majority of our heritage buildings. We also have been collaborating with the Department of Defense. They showcased us about 100,000 odd heritage objects that they have in the Department of Defense, but also the Department of Transport has got a range of heritage objects that they're looking after, from the old locomotives to the old boats. So South Africa is rich with heritage resources, chair, honorable members. We have not gone into the area of training of tour guides. I had a privilege of being taken through by a young man when we went to Lukabani Bay, who knew the history of that site. It was quite thrilling to be taken through the history of the site by this young man. But we need to strengthen the training of tour guides so that when we go to visit our sites, we experience our heritage resources. We have got Africans who can tell the stories of those resources. The other challenge that we have is we are still looking at having a seminar around heritage and development, because sometimes we become the enemies of the developers because they see us as inhibiting their program of economic development in the country. Whilst we are saying that whilst we promote and we support the economic development in the country, we have a mandate to say that the heritage of the country as well. So we're looking at having a seminar with developers and talk about heritage conservation and development. But as I've indicated, we acknowledge that there's a lack of skills in terms of the heritage resources management sector, and also ourselves internally, we've got a lack of resources. We would like to have more experts in the area of skills. Chairperson, in conclusion,
we acknowledge the fact that we need to work closely with the Department of Tourism, and we acknowledge that we're working with them around heritage tourism strategy, but we are mindful of the fact that we need to strengthen those relations, and we would like to get to a situation where we have an MOU with the department so that we can help them to find our areas of partnership.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Honorable members, let's hear what you've got to say. Honorable Adams, Honorable Probok, Honorable Foss, Honorable Matele, Honorable Matobe, Honorable Kaiko.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the for the presentation. It is our first presentation from the entity, and it was quite interesting. Chairperson, I would like to start again. The presenter said they would like to enhance their partnership with the tourism business. How do you see, can they enhance their partnership with the tourism business? Because these two, heritage and tourism, I think goes hand in hand. I would like to know from the presenter that they do an audit on the skills that they need. And what are they doing to get the necessary skills? As an entity of arts and culture, do they have bursaries? And how do they promote these jobs that they as a heritage entity need? How do they enhance it? Do they, for example, have a close relationship with basic education? You know, one or two accidental engagements with schools, that is not enough. But there should be an ongoing, there should be a memorandum of understanding between your departments and that of basic education. Next, Chairperson, I was very interested in the fact that they say, first I should go to the governance of heritage sites in South Africa. Do you have a provincial and a local offices, or are they only situated with the MCs and in municipalities? And how do you engage with them to make sure that the sites that are local are protected? And what sort of protection are you speaking when you name it protection? Then, Chairperson, on what are heritage resources on page 7. You say they can be defined as, number 2, places to which oral traditions are attached. Now, you know, I'm passionate about oral traditions because the people that know the stories they die. What are you doing to preserve our oral traditions? Number 1. Where are these sites? You mentioned one, but I'm thinking specifically about the first people of this country. How did you manage to protect the knowledge about the Khoi and the San people? And then, Chairperson, I know there are grave sites overseas. Is it the responsibility of SARA in collaboration with the main department to protect these grave sites? And how do you link this rich cultural heritage that we have? How do you link it with tourism? You know, we as a committee, we are passionate about domestic tourism. And all over South Africa, they are heritage sites. What do you as an entity do with the local LEDs to promote domestic or local tourism? Do you think municipalities give you enough support in protecting heritage sites? And if they don't, what are you doing? Thank you, Jefferson.
Thanks. I've just one observation, which I'd like to put as a form of a question, and my colleague, Honourable Foster, remain patient. Going through this presentation, one gets between the lines a sense of how difficult this job must be for your agency. And because you are an agency of the Department of Arts and Culture, you have to work with sites which promote and maintain protect sites that actually belong to you. And trying to actually do or fulfill your mandate on behalf of tourism, the Public Works Department has a role to play in some of these issues. And then province and municipalities have to often carry out the mandate that you would have done had it been yourself. So there's a lot of different government entities that have to work together to actually make this thing work. And the impression I get having traveled overseas more than once is that it's not really working that well. And we're barely scratching the surface of fulfilling the mandate, which I think is correct. I'm not saying that in order to say that your entity is not in its job. It simply illustrates the difficulty of doing the job. So if I take my own constituency into account, and some of the people behind you will know what I'm talking about, we've got the Nelson Mandela Catcher site in Ogani Municipality, which, as you know, is just slightly northwest of Howick, no more than 3 kilometers away. It's been very difficult to get the Department of Transport, the Department of Tourism, local government, simply to put up a sign on the entry to advertise it. That's the promotion thing you talk about now. The minister has come to the party, and I'm pleased to say there are making some progress. But it's an intermunicipal, interdepartmental battle that you have. And now the local tourism community organization is having to work with a provincial department to see this project through. Before we had the actual site, which is now a very iconic site, it's Wolf's Hammer site, I think, I hope you've all seen it. We had on the other side of the road a monument which is no bigger than this desk that the committee secretary and the committee chairperson is sitting at, no bigger than that, with a little placard saying this is where Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela was captured, probably the size of a chair. That's how big it was. And there was an attempt to plant some plants around the thing. Within weeks, it was overgrown by weeds. The grass was never cut. You could easily drive past it without knowing it was there. That was the case for decades. The municipality was unable to do anything about it, or unwilling, whatever the case may be. It was a massively untapped potential type of situation. On the other side of Howick, on the southeast, you've got Howick Falls, where you've got some very impressive waterfalls, and embryonic tourism industry going around it. And there's a walk called the Gorge Walk down to the bottom of the shore. And part of that collapsed, and there was a few making a close, because the municipality doesn't have enough money. This is a municipality with 150 million in budget to actually repair the walk and to put in at least volunteer security guards. So again, heritage site, it's something which people go in thousands, so they've got 12,000 people in London. But it's now in disrepair because this isn't funding. So I'm not on like this, and if you talk about grave sites, in the Hero Acre and Schwank, those particular places, many of the monuments to people who fought in various wars on a such gross disrepair, vandalized, the state of the other part of Durban, for example, but to city by city, province by province, where I say we're only scratching the surface, which is not to say that your job isn't important, it's incredibly important, but I think that you don't, A, have the funding to do it, you don't actually have enough interdepartmental cooperation to actually see these challenges and do them effectively, and it's an incredibly hard job to get municipalities to actually look after assets that they have. And therefore my question is, given you some examples of pretty heartbreaking stuff one gets to see as a member of parliament, but also any project that I want to see. I mean, it's actually incredible for me that Nelson Mandela had such a good maintained site until the new one was built for so long. I can't understand a single most famous person in our country having sketched those problems out. How do you see the future going forward? Actually, in some way or another, either strengthening the mandate or having legislation passed that perhaps makes more of an obligation to compel municipalities and provinces to work more closely with you to appropriate the correct quantum of funds to maintain these funds and actually assist you in achieving the mandate, which is very laudable and very needed. Because if you look at other countries, one senses they put an enormous amount of effort into doing what your agency is trying to do, but they are also succeeding. So it's very hard to go to any modern country these days, go to a city where there aren't people who need to see what they, these are the places to go to, this is how you get to them. Go there, they're well maintained, they look beautiful, everybody wants to see what they can at that particular place, no matter what it might be. You feel that you've actually had a rewarding and rich experience once you've been there, and you come away thinking, these people in the city know how to honor their heroes, they know how to revere their dead, they know how to respect their culture, they know how to actually promote, and even have an economic spin-off from the souvenirs you can buy at that place, the sites that they actually are maintaining their heritage from. Australia is the best example, with the smallest little town. Does an enormous amount, particularly their monuments, and particularly the monuments of the people who died fighting fascism in the wars. It's quite incredible, quite moving when you go there and you see how much they appreciate the sacrifice that their young men and their young women made. I just don't get that impression that we are there quite as a nation. And it's not just your department, obviously, or your agency. There's a general kind of lack of respect for that type of thing. And I suppose it comes out of the public's experience where you see a badly maintained site with cracks in the pavement, leaves growing out around the thing, obviously nobody cares, but people go across and go there to have the fried chicken, a Coke bottle there while they're walking past. And that's what I see. I mean, if you're honest, a lot of Africans do see it. I see some of you nodding. And if all of us as a nation and as your agency, we need to be part of the solution. But I'd like to know from you how you see the future going forward to try and get toward those kinds of excellence that we do see in other countries and I'm sure you would like to see in our country.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The ultimately linking heritage and cultural activities to tourism has major advantages in the social and economic spaces. So we've said this before, tourism is ultimately a bridge between the past and the future, and it gives people wonderful experiences, and therefore it becomes important for your agency to preserve the cultural and heritage aspects of our country, so that we could ultimately give people that authentic experience, and also linking the past to the future, so that future generations will have appreciation for our country's rich diversity. And I think, you know, ultimately the ability of municipalities has a direct impact on your work, and my colleague has mentioned this in his input. And therefore, when the ability of municipalities to deliver on some of these mandates, when it fails, then ultimately tourism fails in those municipalities. And many of these places that you have identified falls within the jurisdictions of those municipalities. And we know that many municipalities are faced with major challenges in terms of service delivery demands and priorities. And therefore, when the budget gets approved, then usually tourism and, in this case, cultural and heritage aspects, you know, would get the minimum of municipalities' priority. And this is where my colleague has made a very good argument, that there needs to be a stronger collaboration between your agency and the various departments of arts and culture, public works, tourism, etc. In fact, it's quite interesting that next week when our committee embarks on our oversight, that we have linked the three departments, which in our view should in fact be one department once we look at minimizing this very big cabinet and reducing it into a cabinet that's lean and mean, that tourism, arts and culture and environmental affairs should actually be one ministry. because most of these things actually are interconnected. And if you look at the issues that you are faced with as an agency, it comes down to that particular point of getting all those departments into one and actually getting them to deliver on this very, very important mandate of arts and culture and heritage promotion. So there is, in my view, a disconnection between what your department aims to achieve, and I know that you have got good intentions, and clearly from your presentation, you are very passionate, and your efforts are most certainly appreciated. But it becomes impossible for you to fully deliver on your mandate when you have some of the departments down the value chain, and including municipalities, not in a position to provide you with the necessary resources, funding, or even the necessary will to be able to do what is necessary. And that comes down to maintenance of sites, signage, and all of the other things that's already been highlighted. So that is just a big issue that will forever make it impossible for you to deliver free on this very important mandate. Now, the situation is, for me, even worse when you are trying to declare more sites. And I quote, you said we are continuing to declare more sites. Now, that's very important because we need to reflect diversity. We need to make sure that more sites throughout our country are identified, declared, and then obviously all the necessary legalities and management plans kick in as soon as a site is declared. But, you know, it's easy to declare a site, but it's more difficult to actually maintain it and to preserve it if you do not have the available funds to do so. So we are very much in favor of more sites to be declared, but what obviously becomes important is the budget available and the political will of most of those jurisdictions, whether it's provincial governments or municipalities, to become active agents in your declaration. And therefore then, you know, there's also an impact on your marketing. Not so much product development, because the product is already there, it's the reason why you are declaring it as a heritage site. But then the marketing of those sites, because it's one thing again declaring it, and it's on paper declared, but it's another thing showcasing it to South Africa, because your presentation comes at a very important time as we are now in Tourism Month. And we have seen major challenges in the domestic tourism space, because we are trying to aim or work towards entrenching a culture of travel amongst all South Africans, because there are various reasons cited for the non-travel culture in our country: affordability, limited geographic spread, and a whole host of other reasons. And I think the work that you do can tremendously add value to our domestic tourism strategy, because we need to showcase the rich diversity of our country through all of these heritage sites, etc. And because we need to get South Africans to experience their country, to have appreciation for the past, so that we leave a legacy as we go forward into the future. And therefore, marketing of these sites becomes key. And I haven't heard much of your marketing strategy this morning, and that is for me something that is perhaps missing from your presentation, but the reason why you come to Parliament, so that we can exercise our oversight and give input. Because we have to market these sites, because once you market them and you have more people visiting these sites, then there are economic activity in those areas. And then the argument or the issue with regards to raising additional levy perhaps comes to the fore. And in our briefing pack, our content advisor has alluded to this possibility in terms of our engagement with you this morning, to ask the question whether there should be, or what models exist worldwide on funding heritage resources, except on government budgets, and if such funding models exist, has SIHRA conducted any benchmarking, and what is the opinion of you in regard to the introduction of the heritage levy for maintenance and enhancement of heritage experiences. Very valuable contribution from our content advisor, because I think that comes down to the availability of funds. But then again, marketing. Because if it's marketing, then obviously you will also generate funds in that regard, and I think that becomes an important point. Collaboration. You know, I come from the five municipalities. I would like to say that municipalities are independent spheres of government. But I come from Cape Town, and so I would have that argument. But if I see the rest of the country where municipalities are really struggling just to deliver on the basics, then adding this to their budget and to their line items in terms of their IPs, etc., it's just not going to be possible. So what plans do you have in place to actually assist those struggling municipalities to maintain and preserve these places of heritage, etc.? And here I come to the example of the Kango Caves. Last week I had the opportunity to visit the Kango Caves together with the Western Cape Minister of Finance to engage with the municipality and the Kango Caves management on their plans to save the Kango Caves. Because we know that the Kango Caves is a very important heritage site. It's been declared in terms of the legislation. So we'd like to know what is your involvement in terms of the conservation plan and all the other issues relating to the Kango Caves as a very important jewel in the Southern Cape, but also in South Africa, because it's an international recognized tourist attraction, but it's an heritage site, and I would like to know what is your involvement and your views on that particular site. And then tour guides, very important, because you do not have your own tour guides. They form part of the tourism industry, and there needs to be obviously training to make sure that tour guides are equipped with the relevant information of these places of interest, because you don't want them to damage our brand by giving the wrong information. So what collaboration is there between your agency and the Tour Guides Association to make sure that we give tour guides the necessary information, because they become your ambassadors of these heritage sites, because we want to see more South Africans view these sites, and tour guides obviously that important link. And then the last point that you mentioned, Tulbagh is in my constituency, and I just want to find out, you mentioned that there's a particular site in Tulbagh that falls under your agency. If you can just give me that information, I'll be very grateful. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me welcome the presentation as we have been given this morning. I want also to have a few things to raise here. The one on the toll guides is already asked, and I'm sure it did cover me well. And then there is also the issue of the municipalities. I know in the very same area where we were on Monday, that municipality, it has been trying to have the site around the area where you are of a botanic garden, also to protect the plantation that is in that particular area, that it is used as medicines and so on. So I want to know whether that can also fall under FAR, the botanic gardens. They've been trying to do that in that particular area. The Makwena Hatala heritage site that you have just opened Monday is also in my constituency. In fact, if I knew about it even before I go home, before I make other arrangements, I would have joined you on Monday at that particular place. I wanted to check also, indeed, all these heritage sites are found in municipalities, all of them. But now you are now classifying them according to municipalities, provinces, and national. Can you put us through how you classify them, how to differentiate them, that this one it will be national, province, and so on? See that they are all in these municipalities. Okay. Yes, the other one is about the way we have been getting a lot of information that even the Robben Island is not well taken care of. What is the situation now? Seeing that it is also an heritage site, if it has got this type of problems, that it is dilapidated and so on, it should be worse when it comes to even to the local ones. What is the situation presently? How is it now maintained? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Firstly, I must say the most important struggle in post-apartheid South Africa is the struggle against forgetting.
forgetting our past and forgetting the men and the women who led to our presence. I would say the most of thing my colleagues have already mentioned. The main mandate of South African Heritage Resource Agents is to identify, conserve, protect, and promote South African heritage. One of the most devastating impacts of colonialism and apartheid was the systematic eradication of black culture and heritage. It should then be a priority for the post-apartheid majority government to recapture our lost culture and heritage. We argue at the last portfolio committee, we have heard that one of the major stumbling blocks to the growth of domestic tourism is the fact that we do not pay attention to our own heritage and culture as a black people. So it is shocking for me to see that on the slide, I think it was slide 9, of the 36 properties you have, none capture the essence of the African cultural and heritage tradition. How do you justify having the food tracker movement as your declared heritage site? And there is no capturing whatsoever of 100-year wars of deforestation waste by people of Eastern Cape against land theft waste by the British. Should we as a newly liberated country not trust that more than the heritage of those who made us? If our object is to promote tourism among black people in particular, why would they want to go visit a Futeha monument? And also, I don't know if it's just for inconvenience sake, but I also see the name of Robert Sobukwe listed as one of the memorials of the founding father in your portfolio. When last did you visit his grave? Do you know that it has been vandalized so often that you don't even play any meaningful role in the development of our democracy? Except for Ubiko and Sobukwe, all these other people are former ANC members. I say the only one who are the founding fathers of our democracy. So my argument here is that no meaningful African-centered approach to the question of heritage. You spend the little resource you have preserving the heritage of our former oppressors. And I have heard unpleasant narrative about your building portfolio as well. Who occupies the building currently? How much do they pay in rent? And the last one is the most important factor.
Thank you very much, Shepherd. Let me join my colleagues in welcoming the report and also thanking the dedication for coming to present. It was being teaching for the first time. We have identified the fact that they have something to do with tourism. That is why we have invited them to be presenters here. There's nothing said about how you are structured. I was also interested in that as an agency. If you want us as politicians to look at you with brighter eyes, you must say something about job creation. You must say something about poverty alleviation. You must say something about women emancipation, because you would understand that in the statement by the president, he committed himself in front of South Africans that we are the government that will ensure that there are jobs and that will address the issues of gender and also will alleviate poverty. I will also
join my other colleague who has asked you about other role players, because I think yours is to identify and declare. How do you make sure that the their site is accessible, is protected, and ensure that it also attracts tourists, and also the spin-off are there for the nearby communities? You also touched on the issue of yourselves looking after 36 properties. There comes the issue of ownership to those properties. Is there no duplication in funding that program, because you are not the owners of the properties, you are just looking after? Is there no other means? Does that mean that the land or the property that you are looking after must be transferred to you as an agency for ownership during that time, or there's dual ownership because you are looking after somebody else owns? How has the campaign on the status must fall, how has it impacted on your progress? Because there has been this campaign by young people that statues must fall, and I think some of those statues belong to your own whatever money that you have. I am also forced to highlight the fact that there has been a decrease in domestic tourism that has been pointed out by Statistics South Africa. What does that mean to me and you? Do these people of South Africa understand the importance of visiting these heritage sites? Are we doing enough in the marketing ourselves as the committee, and also yourselves, because I think you have a role to play there? I am also interested in understanding the public participation role before the sites are at the gate. Who does what? And also in the issue of World Heritage Sites, are there any standards for sites to belong to that category of being a World Heritage Site? What role do you play as an agency? You are a South African agency, and some of the sites belong to that category. What role do you play there? I think some other questions have been asked by my other colleagues. Thank you very much, Shepard.
Thank you very much. Before you respond, this is not my mandate, but I'll ask about it all the same. What is the structure of your budget? Is it extensive enough to cover the most important aspect of the work? It has been pointed out by other members that heritage is a three-tier thing: national, provincial, and local. Is there a way of working together in executing the work that you are doing? Or in promoting also heritage, working together with these other spheres? You spoke about very minimal numbers of professionals in your area. Is it not the highest time that you begin to talk and to talk and even be part of the curriculum from basic education levels? Because if somebody at 21 should want to be part of heritage profession, they might not be as interested as they would be as been had they learned about it earlier. And you stated the issue of professionals that have got a problem. And how do you brand South African heritage? Are you dependent on South African brand? Are you expecting other structures to brand it for you, or how do you brand it yourself? security, or maybe as part of agriculture. We don't know where cheese. Actually, you don't only work with departments mainly. I think you work with all of them. Because if some of the heritage sites are to preserve some form of medicinal stuff and things, you are with health. You are with everybody. So you are on roller skates. But you are very much with tourism. You are very much with environment. Because even if you want to do something around heritage, but if environmental says, say that the impact, environmental impact study is against that, I don't think you can go beyond that. And then, if you can share with us if there have been any cases of litigation where you've gone forward and established your heritage sites in those areas, whether because of land issues or any other legal issues. And how to work with communities in order to promote the heritage aspect of your work. And the museum fall under you? Thank you. And actually, the representatives from tourism can respond respectively when they feel it cuts across tourism. And also the issue of tour guides is very, very important. And to speak with relevant structures, basically tour guides, but also channel the curriculum is not way there. People become very obsessed with the area where they are doing their tour guiding. Thank you, Mani. So before you respond, the content advisor would just like to ask one thing.
Is that a credit on the issue that you presented when you met with the Department of Agriculture in Okanda, but your product portfolio now including hotels? To say how does that work? Are these hotels going to be owned by you, or are they part of the buildings that have been declared that you are converting into hotels, or are you building new hotels? If so, what has been the interaction with the Department of Tourism and the tourism industry per se? Because if then you are entering into hotel business, so my view will be those maybe need to be run by professional hoteliers than to be at the hand of SAFRA. So what are the arrangements there? What is happening around here? Is it based on your presentation that you made to the Department of Agriculture that is picked up from parliamentary information? Thank you.
Just before you respond, how do you popularize the various sites you are responsible for? Mm-hmm. So there's something to promote the local tourism and to promote a number of other issues. How do you begin to promote the heritage?
Thank you, Honorable Chairman, members. The team that is here with me, I think it's an opportunity now just so that you can also hear their voices.
Yeah.
I think I'll start with the CFO on the issue of budget. Just talk about the money that we have. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. The South African Heritage Resource Agency, unfortunately, does not have a huge budget. The total budget, 99% of our funding comes from the Department of Arts and Culture. Now, for this current year, 16-16, we only received 58 million. Now, this 58 million, 60% of it goes to compensation of employees. We also receive funding for specific projects that are given to the organization. And in terms of the goods and services or the capital budget that is supposed to assist us in maintaining these sites and conserving them, we have a very extremely inadequate extremely inadequate budget. Our goods and services budget is just around 15 million for the entire organization and as a national department. For this year, if you look at our budget, the baseline is on 70 million. But that 70 million, 20 million is projects that are specific. We are doing projects in France, the Devilwood project for the of the World War One, where we will be celebrating the centenary of the World War One next year. Now, the bulk of that is just linked to projects, not to our ongoing sites that we declare that we had to continuously maintain. That shows the inadequacy. If you look at the structure of the organization, especially within the core business, we don't have enough professionals and experts who can do most of the things that have been cited by the honorable members. The unit is very, very limited in terms of capacity. We did embark in the previous year on a turnaround strategy and developed a new structure that could to somehow be aligned to the mandate. Unfortunately, that structure was never funded. So we remain with the minimal structure that was established when we moved over from the MMC days. We did an assessment of our act versus the structure versus the strategy, and it became very clear that our structure is not aligned to the strategy. We are just delivering a fraction of our mandate if you were to look at the act. Hence, the inadequate budget that we currently have at the stage. And perhaps I'm not sure if I should touch on the hotels. That is in terms of the property maximization strategy. However, there is no intention for SAR to run hotels. I just want to go back to what was raised, which is very interesting. What funding models do we have to ensure continuing maintenance of our heritage? That is an attempt to say, with the 36 properties that we are talking about, how do we spread those assets such that we are able to maintain them? Most of them are in a state of disrepair, like it has been said. But the only way for us to preserve them and maintain them in the same state that we want future generations to see them is for us to be able to say, how do we utilize those properties to ensure that we are able to maintain them? But there was no intention to run hotels. Obviously, it's a strategy at its infancy, which still needs to be enhanced with all the role players.
Thank you. The honourable member Adam was asking what strategy we have to promote skills as an entity of the Department of Arts and Culture. What does Arts and Culture do to assist us in that regard? Arts and Culture has got arts, culture, and heritage. And arts would then be your other fields, not necessarily heritage. They would have your creative industries, they would have language services, they would have a whole range of sectors that they look at as arts and culture, but also heritage as well. They've got a branch that looks after heritage promotion. They do offer bursaries from that heritage branch, and those bursaries would offer to students to go into university, as I said, to study towards becoming a heritage professional. But then they would get a bursary to study archaeology, bursary to study all the fields that are related to heritage resources management as part of the bursary structure of the Department of Culture. So that's what we get from the Department of Culture. But also as an entity, we entered into an agreement with Rhodes University to run, as I've indicated, a course that would be focusing at enhancing the skills of those that are already in the profession. So those are some of the attempts that we are embarking upon to mitigate minimally towards the skills shortage, especially in heritage professional fields. Yesterday I met with a group from the Association of Professional Heritage Practitioners. And what is interesting is that the professional heritage practitioners, they range from architects, from engineers, from it's a whole range of professions, but that are then you'd be an architect, but you'd be a heritage architect.
then you'll be an engineer, but you'll be focusing on heritage. So it's not an easy profession, if I may use that, as where you say, like your teacher, you then go and get trained as a teacher. You get trained in certain fields, and then you then, I think by passion, you then focus on heritage. So they were talking about looking at developing a council and forming a council of heritage practitioners, which would then assist in professionalizing the profession, if there's anything like that. But then they were mindful of the fact that the Department of Environment and Affairs has got a council that has been established, but that council has got sub-sector, and they were saying they part of those sub-sectors talk to heritage. So they also wanted to see if they can get a home within the Department of Environmental Affairs. But that's, those are the challenges that we experience as and when we discuss the issue within the sector. Honourable Member Adam spoke about close relationship with the Department of Basic Education, and also Shepherdson alluded to that. What the Department of Arts and Culture has done in terms of assisting with the competing priorities of the Department of Basic Education, where you would want learners to learn math and science, and then you find heritage and arts and culture being under the, is it life orientation? Yes. So what they did then was to place to get a program which is called an artist in deaf school, so that they then themselves, the Department of Arts and Culture, sponsor artists to go and assist in the schools and teach learners about art, but also it would be then art, dance and music and performing arts and visual arts. So I think that's something that we could also explore, to say that if we want to get heritage at an early age, we ask the Department of Arts and Culture to broaden their Artists in Every School program and incorporate the issue of heritage, because at the moment, I'm not sure how the curriculum in terms of heritage is structured, because I take your advice, Jefferson, that we need to be there at the discussion and creating stage, so that the curriculum itself does accommodate the issue of heritage. So that's how the Department of Arts and Culture has approached the issue of ensuring that at least art and culture is catered for. Do we have provincial and local offices? I'm just going through some of Honorable Adams' questions. We have provincial heritage resources authorities that are under the provincial departments of Arts and Culture, as we are under the national department of Arts and Culture. And then we meet, Honorable Member would know, the DG would then meet with the HODs. And that's where then we also have an opportunity as SARA to go and meet and engage with HODs. We are concerned about the class in terms of their full functionality and being able to execute their roles as enjoined by the Act. At the moment, we have got three class provincial heritage services that we can say that fully functional. You've got your heritage certain cases, you've got Amazon cases, and you've got the Estate Heritage Resources Authority. The others, we have to come in terms of, maybe they don't have archaeology. So they need intervention, they come to us and we have an agency agreement with them so that we can assist them. So we that's the relationship that we have with provincial head of government. We don't have provincial offices as SARA. I think we had them before and they were devolved, the functions were devolved to provincial heritage resources authorities. With regards to local authorities, we have, I think a lot of members have indicated that we need to collaborate with local municipalities. They've alluded to the fact that yes, we don't, the heritage sites are at local level. We have been approached by the South African local government, association. Yes. I think they are concerned with that. At local government level, I think Honourable Force alluded to that. There are other competing priorities as well there. There's electricity, there's water, there's housing. So local government and municipalities are dealing with those issues. And when it comes to heritage, it becomes one of those, is it what? What do we call it? by the way, issue that does not necessarily need to be at the forefront. And in the budget that they have on heritage, they then use it for celebrating heritage. So we're funding, we're trying to find inroads, and we're encouraged by the fact that Saga is saying, let's come and talk, because we acknowledge that we have a big role to play in municipalities, and there are projects that they're piloting. I think they're using about 4 municipalities, from big metros to district and local. I think they're structured to ensure that they go across all the areas of municipalities, so that we promote the preservation and protection of heritage at municipal level. So it's in the stages, they were lobbying us, wanting us to indicate our endorsement of the project, which of course we embraced fully, because we realized that we do need local municipalities to assist us. Protection of overseas site. We just repatriated the remains of Moses Kotane and J.B. Mas from Moscow. What we agreed with the city of Moscow was that the busts that were in those graves, we repatriated the remains, but the graves will remain. They won't be used or reused. So we will then go and reinstall those busts that were there and inscribe to indicate that who used to lie here. So we do have that relationship and those projects that we do outside of the hut. Next week on Friday, the president will be unveiling a tombstone, the memorial story that we would have erected in honor of the 21 traders that fell during the Matola raid. And as you would know, South Africa has also collaborated with the Mozambican Republic to build a monument, as an Atolari monument that is there. It's a big structure, beautiful structure. But at the great site, we have been mandated to build memorials in honor of those cadres that were during that raid. So yes, we have our presence internationally as well. The CEO has alluded to the commemoration of the centenary of the World War in Belvillewood, specifically in France, in the province of Somme. South Africa was present, South African soldiers were present to protect the wood, and a lot of our soldiers went there. And we've got a museum and a memorial in Delvent that commemorates the role of South Africa during that war. So, however, it was erected in the 1980s, so it's not transformed, it does not reflect the role, especially of the South African Native Labour Corps at the time, who were only given and who were not allowed to take guns and what. So we have been mandated to transform that space. So we are working on that project so that when the centenary commemoration happens in July 2016, we would have worked on the site so that it reflects the true history of what happened in Denver. Is there enough support from municipalities? I think I've alluded to that, Honorable Adams, in terms of support with municipalities. But also what we have done in terms of youth development, we are now with the Salt Planning Museum, your university in the Northern Cape, has got a program now of heritage studies. It started a certificate program. They want to escalate it, if that's what they use, into a degree program. So we are entering into a memorandum of understanding with them, so that at least we are part of that program. So those are the strides that we are making towards ensuring that we do work on the field with impact. Honorable, you mentioned a lot, and I think we appreciate your contribution and you acknowledge the competent priorities. And with the great size, for instance, what we have done is, there's a lot of concentration camps, there's also war graves in the country, throughout the country. So we have embarked on a project of upgrading and cleaning and maintaining. So some of those graves needed a lot of maintenance. But we need to also expand in that program and include some of the concentration camps, especially those that had black in them. The National Museum in Bloemfontein has done extensive work on locating the black concentration camps. So we at least we know where they are. We are working with the, we want to work with the Commonwealth War Graves Commission. There's also the Heritage Foundation that is very good at maintaining the grave site. So we are collaborating with that. And of course, the Department of Defense, we won't leave it behind because they're also the custodians of those graves. We also have got the National Liberation Heritage Route that the Department of Art and Culture is working on. That is going to ensure also that we do transform the heritage landscape in the country. So we are involved in that program, because what we have to do tonight is ensure that those heritage sites that have been identified to be part of the National Liberation Heritage Route are of course indeed graded and protected. I would love to go to Australia and see how they do their heritage. So with the permission of the honourable members, I will ask to do a site visit in Australia and see how they... What we are doing is, we in terms of how do you see the future going forward, the Department of Arts and Culture is reviewing the white paper on our culture and heritage. It was a process that was undertaken in 1986 with very passionate members of the task team that was set up at the time that came up with our act and other pieces of legislation. So there was that process of the white paper from which we are born. But Arts and Culture now is 20 years and 21 years down the line reviewing the white paper to see how can we improve. So that all the what we have experienced, what have we done, where did we go wrong, and how can we improve this process of reviewing of the white paper with assistance greatly as far as that is concerned. And of course, I mean, somebody was saying Jane is also good in management of heritage resources. We are going to be in the process benchmarking against best practices as well. And I will indicate to them the issue of Australia. The thing is, Honorable, that sometimes this fear of management of heritage resources, we need to strengthen it. As Sarah, we know that we are responsible for national heritage sites that are of national significance. That's how we differentiate between them. And then some site has got significance for that particular province. And another site would have significance for a particular location where it is located. So that's how we structure them. Somebody correctly want to add on that one, especially the management and the classification.
Madam Chair, I think what Ms. Vizza is alluding to the fact is that according to the National Heritage Resources Act, it's a three-tier system. And the system works on the basis that SORA is responsible for national identifying and declaring and managing natural resources. Then there's a system where provincial, which is the grade two size, it's managed by the province, and 99% of them are so from the former national monuments, and by the introduction of the new act, they do all devolve to the grade two sites and provincial heritage sites. And then at a lower level, we're talking about grade three sites. So there's a clear demarcation, and that's according to the National Heritage Resources Act, which even prescribes to us the structure of how to operate. So it's not that it's insular, but it's a question where SORA devolves through an assessment program, gives to the provincial authorities the power to conduct their businesses within the Act under the Grade 2 and provincial heritage sites, and then they, on their turn, have to empower the local authorities and give them a mandate to proceed and to carry out their functions. In essence, the function does not differ between the different species, but what happens is that each of the significance is measured at a local level, and then at a provincial level. So there's a measure in which something that is of local significance cannot be national, and that of provincial cannot be national, and vice versa. There's a sense in which a quick measure is just as one would say, if you experience the Union Building, if one were to measure that as a national heritage site, there can be no question, because of its status, because of its history, because of its structural and physical significance. So those are the sorts of measures that are used to determine. And within each one of those different tiers of government. There has to be a structure which in a way is replicated from SARA, or where they find that their specific needs, they can then create different mechanisms so that each of us also function optimally. And as is alluded to the fact that SARA cannot possibly be responsible for every resource specifically and individually in the country. Therefore, we have the TTS system so that nothing should actually fall through the cracks. I think that's just what I would like to, if that is enough. Would you like to carry on?
No, thank you. That's what I think that covers that. But I'm sure if you had identified any other questions, Greg and CS, that you needed to, you can assist with that fine. One of them asked about the economy. Greg, do you want to talk to those about the provincial?
Yeah, the Kangaroo case is the provincial function. It falls under, it's within Western Cape, it falls under the Heritage Western Cape, which is the provincial Heritage Resources Authority. And I think they, to talk about our role in respect of the provincial authorities and the local authorities, we cannot, because of the track of the act, we cannot interfere. Once we've given them the authority to conduct business on our behalf, we have to fully entrust them with the trust and with good conscious conduct. But as is obvious, there are a number of issues around, you know, budgets, what is priority, and also there is a tension between development and heritage. The City of Cape Town, for instance, we have great struggles. If I can give an example in Langa, for instance, where they have a need to provide housing. But in the same breath, there are sites that are serious heritage values, serious heritage concerns. So there's a tension between community interest and the interest of development. So we then, as an authority, have to find that fine balance, saying we have to support development, we have to see the need, and so speaking to the issue of job creation, it's a difficult call on SORA to be directly involved in job creation, but it's how we structure our contract and how we engage with communities. For instance, if we talk about Lunga, for instance, there's an engagement between the City of Cape Town and SORA all through the process. So that at a certain point we meet a balance between the two and allow development to take place, but not at the risk of heritage resources, for example, if I may talk about that. And can I just allude on to the issue of basic education? We have, on more than one occasion, engaged with departments of basic education, not really just in the Western Cape, but the maritime unit has been, over many years, has done programs in Gauteng, particularly Soweto, to alert people to the possibilities of underwater cultural heritage, etc. And we ourselves have been engaging with the Western Cape, particularly around the subject advisor aspect, which is almost above that of the syllabus creation. Because once you start talking to the subject advisor, that is the person who then can tweak and consult and have, in our consultation, them identify, for instance, one aspect, which is the issue of grading. The National Heritage Council had a competition, which they ran with DAC and the different education departments, and one of the key problems they discovered is a shortfall in the curriculum, the issue of identification. How do you grade something? How do you know when something is of local significance? How do you know something of national significance? And that is some of these inputs that we make at that level, and that should lead you to the syllabus and tweak syllabus and change syllabus, in particular around the issue of basic education. Yes, I have also had the issue of World Heritage Sites. UNESCO is actually the person who identifies and shall we say, gives grading and assesses and gives us the status of World Heritage Sites. The only World Heritage Site at this point, and also most of the World Heritage Sites that we are dealing with in South Africa, are largely around the natural environment and nature rather than heritage per se. But there is an interface between the two. There is interplay between the two. The only site that we are directly involved with, and that is by way of agreement on behalf of UNESCO, is Robben Island Museum. And the issue, there was a question raised around the issue of Robben Island Museum and the condition and the quality and maintenance, etc. Robben Island Museum has its own management structure. And they have on board a series of professionals and experts and skills in different departments, which must identify issues of concern for them, We are only a permitting authority. So if there's any problem or any developmental needs on Robben Island, maintenance issue, we are approached, we submit an application, but we assess that and we give permit to that, and then between RIM and Department of Public Works, they then execute the permit or what the requirements are depending on our assessment of that. And then just in terms of the issue of Robert Sobukwe grave, that has been addressed. There's a whole design has been submitted to SORA. We are looking at that. It has been adjusted. It has been partially approved. There were some concerns around that. To deal with the issue of the security around the site, the grave site itself. But I think it's more than a grave itself. It's the whole cemetery. Because it's also a question of, you now need to upgrade the whole cemetery in order to justify the impact that you're making on one grave. So somebody lying adjacent to Sobukwe's grave, Robert Sobukwe's grave, could find it problematic that you're upgrading this. So we've got to look at it. It's a very sensitive issue, and this is where the issue of public participation come in there. We cannot, any action that SORA does cannot be done unilaterally. We cannot impose on people our intentions. We can only negotiate with them and say, the issue of private ownership is also raised, private property ownership. There is no way that if we've identified a site as of national significance, that we own the property. We only own to protect the significance of that site. That's the only role we play, the significance. And it's in that to do the site visits and alert people, look, this is going to happen, there's a crime developing, or, at that sort of basic level. Also in terms of, particularly in terms of tourism, I think one of the key thing in terms of transformation, as was alluded to, the idea of letting people at local level. At local level, what is it? I think part of our history in this country is the fact that issues have been washed over, issues have been destroyed, issues have been curtailed and locked in and devalued. So the question of the whole education process of alerting people that you have heritage, your own lineage is heritage, and basic is there. So that then you start looking at the spaces around you and the structures around you and say, well, these things are significant. What's our interaction with the Western Cambridge Education Department? We found that some of the pupils or the learners have walked past the site where the UDF was at the structure there, the city of Cape Town put it up, and they were walking past this and looking at this thing that's in the way, and and when through the competition they discovered, oh my word, this is so significant, this is so important, not only to the history of the country, but to us. And then it became something different to them. And through that they began to celebrate these things. I think that is the trick, is to get people to understand that suddenly those people are still alert, they're going to be the ambassadors for that particular structure. So this is how, so it's really it's a pervasive education that is needed. Thank you.
The Act specifically provides that your agency will identify, conserve, protect, and promote. And I'm not getting a sense that there's enough or sufficient promotion of these places of heritage. So the identification comes down to our colleague from the EFF's point that mustn't identify at the cost of another. So she referred to Voortrekker Monument. Yes, there's a place in our South African history for the Voortrekker Monument, but there's also a place in our quest to balance our history to make provision for other important sites to be identified. But the marketing becomes the key for me. And when you said that in terms of the Act you would simply hand over the site, and then, you would hope in good faith that they would deliver on the mandate. I think, Madam Chair, there's a specific issue that we need to address then in the legislation, because if you hand over something in terms of an Act, you can't simply distance yourself from the responsibility any longer, because the wording or the way that you projected or explained this particular handover, because everything is a public record, is that then it becomes the provincial or even the local authority's responsibility to further carry out that mandate. It can be. In terms of the Act, it still remains your responsibility, and therefore you need to exercise oversight, and you need to make sure that there's a recall mechanism, because you can't stand back from simply making sure that the facility is managed properly. So So I think there's a specific issue that I feel very uncomfortable with if that's the case. And also the reference longer. Of course one needs to balance the need to preserve and promote your heritage and obviously new developments, specifically human settlement. But I think then there is the opportunity to make sure that we strike that balance in the way that we actually incorporate heritage into your new developments, so that you find a way to bring the community into the scope of understanding the value of heritage, and that you would then need to obviously address and provide housing, but that we make sure that we incorporate it in such a way that you can strike that balance with human settlement need and heritage need, because both needs need to be obviously addressed. So because we all, in terms of our constitutional obligations, need to make sure that we do that. So, Mr. Chair, those are the two issues that I've picked up now that I just want to flag, because it is of concern if there's no real checks and balances in terms of the legislation. Maybe you explained it, but if you can then just put it for the public record straight in that you do still have a responsibility in terms of making sure that those sites are properly managed, because Robert Island, in fact, the way that it's currently managed is an insult to Matipa's legacy. Let's be honest about it. There needs to be more work done by this department, your department, and Arts and Culture and Public Works to make sure that Robben Island is that iconic site in our history. And clearly it's not. And 3-4 Dome is another example. There's international media criticizing South Africa's handling of 3-4 Dome. And I would like, I haven't raised it earlier on in my questions, but if you're going to allude to that, because I want to know who is responsible, so that we can pinpoint that department and call them to the committee and get them to explain what are the challenges and what are they doing about it, because we can't simply stand back and just allow these places of national, international significance to deteriorate any further. Thank you.
Thank you. Do take note of that.
Yes, thank you. We have taken
note. You need not respond now, but do take note of this.
Yes, thank you, sir. We appreciate that. Thank you, Dr. Moon. I think I have indicated to one of the members that we acknowledge that terms matter in promotion is something that we still need to work on. Chairperson, the parents, the Botanic Gardens, Honorable Masihela was asking Rose, as the Botanic Gardens under the Department of Environmental Affairs under the National Park Board. Yes, Central Park. Yes, Central Park. So on the community can then engage the Department of Environmental Affairs for the site. I think the issue of grading of site, the criteria has been explained by my colleague, but also the issue of Robben Island. Honourable members, Chairperson, you are, Robben Island has got its own board and CEO. You could, I think members could call them to come and explain. But what I know is that they have really worked very hard towards turning around the Robben Island. I was at the launch of the virtual tour that they were embarking upon and introducing, working in collaboration with Google, so that you can then have in the comfort of your home tour Robben Island. So I think that I may not do justice to them because they do have their own authority. How are we structured as an entity? I think Honorable Tago was asking that. We have got a council of 15 members, nine of whom should be the chairpersons of the Provincial Heritage Resources Authority. So from amongst the trust, we call them trust, the chairperson of those trusts are a member of the council. And then six members of the 15 are then appointed by the minister and the minister's appointee in terms of their various expertise as well. At the moment we have got 10 members. We don't have a representative for the Northern Cape trust. We are working towards that, and also a representative for the in Bumalak that we are working towards. Yes. That's how the council is structured, and then we have got the CEO in terms of operations and various units, your corporate services, the human, the heritage resources management unit has got its own subfields. You would have built environment, you would have ground and graves, you would have a heritage object, you would have archaeology, paleontology, and then you would also have agricultural heritage led by different managers.
We do have an office, a finance office in Pretoria, but otherwise we are all based here in Cape Town. There's around 80 odd members of FAST. You will take a note, Honorable Chairperson, of the issue of occupation and poverty alleviation and women empowerment. And we may not have articulated it, but I think it's something that we are also passionate about, and also as women, we really take pride in empowering women. But as we go about and build monuments, as we go about and engage with communities, we make sure that when we go to a community, it's a local community that benefits in terms of, if we are going to build, for instance, we recruit from the local community. We did that when we were in Pella. We did that when we were in Frederiksdorp. We've just done that in Kamachan. So that communities are involved and benefit from the minimal involvement that we have with them. We are currently, I think it has been alluded, we are currently working on, we have engaged with the family and the wife of the late Robert Sobukwe and the son and the family members. We are upgrading as we speak. We've got constructors on site working on that place. And I think what Rick has alluded to is critical to us, because the grave site itself does not lend, as we speak, to each being attracting. So we will have this grave of Wabasubukwe, and then the rest, what about the rest? So as we are working with the community to say, let's make sure that even the roads leading to the grave site must be upgraded. There must be a signage that points people towards that grave site. So we have been in grave on numerous occasions, but we've got contractors on site now working on upgrading that grave. And there are also other graves of other members of the TEC around the Wabasubukwe grave. So we're working with the community and also the TEC to see how we can then to bring them with our proposals in terms of how we want to integrate the other graves of the other TEC members around the football grave. We really do our best to make sure that the histories of South Africa are told.
Chairperson, campaign on roads must fall. I think if anything, for me, if there's anything positive about that, is that South Africans were awakened to understanding heritage and demanding that the heritage landscape reflects all the history, so that it's not biased or skewed towards a certain history. All the histories of the country and the stories of South Africans must be told. So for me, that's what came out of that whole roads must fall campaign, that if it was a committee. Public participation is very critical when we declare crisis. I think Craig has alluded to that. We have to involve communities. We've got 50 days in terms of the act period that we have to allow communities to respond and engage if we are to declare any site or heritage report. Currently, we are on the second month of the 6-day period. We have announced the intention to declare the Freedom Charter. So by the 30th of September, that period closes, and then we will go ahead and finalize the declaration process. So, and we have already engaged with other interested parties which we have identified. So we are already in consultation. We have another meeting scheduled for Monday, for instance, to discuss the declaration of the Freedom Charter. So we do take public participation very seriously. The standards of World Heritage Sites, yes, we conform to the UNESCO Convention, but we do have an African World Heritage Fund network in the country that is housed in South Africa that we also work very closely with towards ensuring that the World Heritage Sites do reflect the standards that are joined by the convention. Do we have any litigation cases? Yes. The company secretary will respond to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor, for the opportunity. We do get correspondence from attorneys who are representing mining companies from time to time. I think when we were mentioning the issues of stakeholders, I think another critical stakeholder is DMR, because sometimes they issue licenses to the mining company,
By then, they have to come to us, to ask for a permit. Where now we need to conduct a heritage impact assessment to see that the willow graves around with my name that they intend to develop. So they get frustrated through our processes because in some provinces, for instance, where we live, even the trucks are not fully functional. Now our unit, the ATM unit, archaeology, paleontology, and meteorology unit, have to go to that particular province and assist to do that heritage impact assessment in order for us to do a thorough due diligence to ensure that we don't just give permit. And then later on, the community, they come and they now write to Zara to complain that the mining company had moved the remains of their last one. So those are the challenges that we are facing from time to time. We sit with those letters, but we're doing our best in the organization, in particular our legal team, to ensure that we work with those units that are involved. And also sometimes the protection unit as well, is one of the units that we have within the organization that we work very closely with. Otherwise, Chairperson, I can give you assurance that we don't have any litigation cases that are filed. As I said, they always send us those, letters, because they are big companies and they would want to work with big lawyers. But we do the duty thoroughly.
I think Justice Kirsten, thank you, sir. You did ask if museums do fall under us. The museums are a heritage center within the Department of Arts and Culture. We are in a forum with them, in the heritage forum with them, but they are a separate sector, subset within the heritage sector. But then lastly, I would like to also indicate that because the issue of the Fort Stoker Monument was mentioned, but we are also commemorating, as I said, the other battles, you know, in the country. On the 30th of September, I think the National Heritage Council will go to and work with the local community and commemorate the Inkomba Hill battle with the Amahoto fort. So that is also something that we are working on. So we are mindful of the other struggles and want to commemorate the heritage that are linked to those other countries and struggles within the country.
Thank you, Chair. I think we're covered. If there's anything,
Honorable, thank you, Chairman. I think she didn't answer my question on the oral heritage. Then just one question. You mentioned greater synergy, but I connected that when visiting grave sites of black people, there's a ceremony that has to be done. Must we go in 1 hour? And how do you, as Sarah, microvision or the institution that runs that grave site, how do you foresee that these traditions that we have as black people are done? Because you know why I'm asking? We visited King William's son, James Cook, heritage site and his home, but you couldn't go to the graveyard because of that. Is it so? Just for interest sake.
I come in as well. I must say that I'm very pleased you raised this question. Indeed, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I once managed Living Heritage on behalf of SARA. I was one of the officials of SARA. In fact, I got my training and my master's in Living Heritage. And one of the areas that we looked at was the conservation of oral traditions, cultural practices that are linked and associated with heritage resources, heritage sites, and heritage objects as well. One of the key things that has been very central basically in the mandate of SARA has been to have a holistic approach in the conservation of heritage objects. In the previous meeting, the focus has always been on tangible heritage resources and either the physical fabric and leaving out the intangible. And the intangible is where basically you can tap into the memory of our living human treasures, the elders, who most of them have perished, have unfortunately have passed on with the information. But we've gone to an extent of engaging with various entities, for instance, PENDAB and various other research institutes to record a memory. So there is repositories in the country in various universities that have the records and the repository of the memory associated with our living heritage. Now, when you go, when you work with sacrifices like graves of iconic people, there are cultural protocols that have to be observed. For instance, there was a trip that we undertook to Lake Ngozi as young enthusiastic researchers, and we could not just enter the lake without negotiating the cultural protocols to govern access, you know, through the traditional authorities, the chiefs, and responsible people. So Zara interacts with communities to be informed, but with relevant stakeholders to guide the process of public engagement as well. So that I know it is in place, and it's something that we've always advocated for, because sacred sites are very sensitive. You can't just rock in and rock out without performing proper cultural protocols and observing those protocols. I can go on the other versions, but I don't want to we can submit written responses, especially on the criteria for UNESCO on declaration of sites and so on. There is a criteria in place that is followed by UNESCO to declare sites as well. There was also a question on, can I tackle the tourism one as well, through you, Chair, so that we do this in a comprehensive manner. I must say that we have a partnership agreement, an MOU in place with the Department of Arts and Culture on issues of heritage and cultural tourism. And a key stakeholder in the implementation of our national heritage and cultural tourism strategy has been SARA. SARA, from a point of view, I'm going to make this so practical. The strategy identified the promotion and further development of product offerings in our annual heritage site, for instance. And what was the role of SARA in that? SARA, firstly, they declared these as part of the national estate, these World Heritage Sites, which is their mandate. Secondly, SARA provided permits for us to be able to erect signage. Because remember, here we're talking about sensitive, protected areas. You can't just build anything in a protected area. You have to go through the legal requirements to do that. So SARA provided us with permits instantly, you know, without, I must say, the turnaround time is amazing, especially when you have established a partnership with them as an entity. Beyond that, we went to the Indaba in 2012, joined with South African Tourism and the Heritage Fraternity to elevate and profile our 8 World Heritage Sites through a DVD and Heritage Pavilion, which was a huge exhibition, the centerpiece of the Heritage Indaba in that year. And then we were also provided by support in terms of permits that are required to shoot in a World Heritage Site, because remember, you get all these multinational companies coming into a World Heritage Site shooting for commercial purposes without ensuring that benefits that accrued from the commercialization of those footages of the documentary are going into the World Heritage Site. So we've been working very instrumental with SARA with regards to those the conservation of heritage resources, but also the profiling and promotion of heritage resources. I know that there is an app that SAT has developed as well. It's called the Madiba Journey. Again, we want to profile and unlock the tourism potential of our heritage resources. We have since done a very intensive study to look at the tourism development needs within our heritage resources broadly. But we said, because of the magnitude of heritage resources in the country, we have to prioritize with the little resources that we have. As Chair, you indicated, tourism also gets a fraction of the slice. You know, heritage the same. But if we bring together our slices, we have 2 slices of cake. So in certain areas, we are able to augment and bring together our little resources to unlock the potential of these heritage resources. But in our 8 World Heritage Sites, we can't have them delisted by UNESCO.
it will be a serious embarrassment for the country. So we have to defend it. We said we want them to be world heritage sites and to make them globally competitive. So we can't lower the standards. So working closely with SARA, the National Heritage Council, the Department of Environmental Affairs, because environmental affairs in this partnership, they are the custodian of the 7 out of the 8 World Heritage Sites. DAC is the custodian of Robben Island. So there's a whole lot of things happening behind the scenes which we might not adequately express at this point in time, but we have a portfolio of evidence to show to what extent we've gone with the little resources that we have. As I indicated, the whole question of training and education, again with our guides, there's a program that is running currently as we speak that is offered by University of Pretoria with our funding assistance. They're training tour guides who are part of the management authorities of the Asian Heritage Site. Again, with the little that we have, we can do something, but we can only do that and optimize our impact when we work as a collective and bring together our resources as well. I'm probably the only living heritage specialist in the country through the training program of SARA in the Aberdeen AMA in there. So I'm very proud of the work that SARA has done for imaging, especially the advantage, you know, South Africans like myself never knew about archaeology or living heritage until I graduated with my BA, and after I came across this program. So there's a lot that can be done with little resources. But we are enjoying this friendship, this partnership with SARA. However, we are mindful of the fact that under DAC there are about 28 agencies, statutory bodies, including national museums and libraries and so on. So we can't sign MOUs with all of them. So DAC has advised us that, no, enter into a partnership agreement with us, the mass body of all these agencies, and work through us with these agencies as well. So the partnership is governed through that structure as well. I'll give my colleague an opportunity to you here just to also touch on issues of tourism, marketing around heritage resources. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and members. I think maybe just to start, it will be a good idea to tell you what our mandate is. So, after South African Tourism, our mandate is basically to market South Africa, both domestically and internationally. So, if we had to say we're winning in the space, it's the number of arrivals we bring into the country, how much they spend, how long they spend in the country, and which provinces they actually visit. So with that being said, if we win there, we're basically creating jobs, because the more money tourists leave in different places in South Africa, either internationally or domestically, that creates jobs in the long run. Just to say that the work that we do is basically, it's based on research. So we regard ourselves as a numbers organization. So we do research both domestically and both internationally. And we make sure that what tourists are looking for domestically and internationally, we meet that demand. So if we were to look at culture is very much demanded both domestically and internationally from tourists. So we make sure that we need to deliver on that. But now if you were to ask a tourist what is culture, it actually goes beyond just the museums that we have in South Africa. A lot of them say it's museums plus meeting the people of South Africa. So it's the hard cultural aspects of tourism as well as the softer aspects of tourism. So for example, they will define learning how to make babuti in Western Cape as part of our culture. So we make sure when we package culture that we package in both the softer side of culture and also our natural heritage museums, etc. When we sell these cultural activities, we don't sell them in isolation. Because we're looking at the entire tourism experience that people want. So as part of the package, we look at wildlife, scenery, culture is one of them, food experiences, and also trying to get all of South Africa sold. And the way we do this is through getting those products or experiences in market. So what you do a lot of is understanding the market so that we meet the need, and then secondly, working with tour operators, because tour operators are actually key
in getting these products sold, because those are the guys on the ground that are actually doing the business. So, for example, speed marketing. It's taking tour operators to different areas around South Africa so that we get them to package the whole of South Africa. And when we showcase products, we make sure that the products are diverse. So it's covering accommodation, experiences, culture and heritage products, etc. So we do that throughout the year with accredited tour operators. The other thing that we do is Indaba. Now, Indaba is an international platform where we get a lot of international tour operators coming, and we include domestic and international in our Indaba offering. And we then do speed marketing activities as well. So a couple of years ago, we did a culture and heritage speed marketing workshop where we had about 200 international and domestic tour operators looking at our culture and heritage products. We did the culture and heritage pavilion. And also in all the work that we do since then, even working with the Cape Hidden Treasures Project, there's a lot of overlap with the culture and heritage products that we promote continuously. Tava spoke about the Madiba app that we worked on, where we look at the content and we were guided by the Nelson Mandela Foundation to promote those products that influence Madiba's life, and we're busy promoting that both domestically and internationally. We also looked at content creation. So there's a lot of content around culture and heritage products. So what we try to do is actually make it consumer-centric. So to make them interesting for domestic tourists to actually put in their itineraries, and the same thing for international tourists. So looking at the different languages and making sure that it's fun and exciting and that people actually do want to visit these attractions. We also looked at some Gandhi content, and some of the Gandhi was also shared with tour operators so we can get more of the Gandhi attractions package. So in all the work that we do, we look at soft culture, we look at hard culture, and to make sure that these things are actually packaged in itineraries so that we can sell South Africa in a way that brings money to the country. So from our space, it's build those cultural tourism products and make it tourism friendly and make it market ready, and we're there to sell it. So
thank you very much for your function in branding. We'll be expecting what you said to the right and said to us. All we do is I think the people are going out, or if members, before we wind up our meeting, to take a cup of tea, we'd like to thank Sarah very much for having been able to come here. I think we're a bit wiser than before you. And I also think we have managed to instill some thinking to yourself. But thank you very much. And maybe we will invite the other part of arts and culture so that we begin to understand how tourism is affected by their effort work. Thank you very much. Yes.
easy for me to come. The vision is my thing. Yes, it's for my thoughts. Yes.
Honourable members, can we look at into the meeting of our the meeting of last week, 27th August. Is everybody who is here appearing in the book of names? Nobody was here and is missing. All right. Page 2. Page 2. Can I move to page 3? Do you have one? Hey, three. We can either say there is a lack of, color of travel. Is that correct? Correct. Okay. And then, under key is action, number one. Revenue. Do we need these days or revenue depends? Blah, blah, blah. Okay. Anything more on this page? On page 5. Honorable,
I think we should be consistent. In some minutes we find unknowable some thought and other activities.
No, it would be honorable, right? Because it's supplementary. What a good is in a mini chamber.
Yes,
this is a mini chamber, isn't it?
Yes.
Without objection. No, objections are when you correct, however. It's not correct.
Yes,
can I? The minister has extended invitations, and I am sure we are all giving copies of those invitations. And the Venezuela Awards, I'm sure you got the invitation. And I would like the members to go to their respective provinces if they are at their constituencies during the time of this. But I'll be going to the one tonight. Hence on the other today.
Easy. Thank you.
Yeah. So I'll be going to the one tonight. Unfortunately, half of them are in one or a constituency. Some will be happening during the constituency period. I would encourage members to go if and when they can afford it. So you are aware of all the celebrations and where we're invited. But on the 25th in Limpopo, we had requested Honorable Masehele to go there to attend whatever. But the 25th, which is the launch, we would bring Nave to attend. The launch of the ecological problem is on Tuesday. Okay? Project is on Tuesday. Tuesday we've got the house. And most of these things come when we're actually in the parliamentary business, serious. And then the portfolio committee is invited to attend a meeting of the Asan Kata on the 8th of September. It's happening here at the... What's the name? M46. It's taking place at M46. Those that could be able to attend, please do attend. And then I am sure you got the overnight visit, a copy. This came to place because we had a meeting with the chairpersons of environmental affairs and agriculture, and we agreed that the various administration staff would come together and come up with a program. And this program has been accepted by all the committees because they have interest. They all have an interest where we got interest. Except on Friday, where we may be with Asan Kata and Department of Environmental Affairs for a short while, we are talking in terms of producing, and then the rest of our time we can spend going to see the new developments at the beach and checking on the state of the project, and then it's over here. But there will be a lot of traveling because of the problem of accommodation. It's mostly rural, and you know, we'll be doing a lot of traveling. And I think because we will be requesting that the people will be leaving to go to Devon, and driving from Devon to the to those areas from the Devon airport, Kisanga airport. That's the end of my story, and the rest of my case. I hope the department have given us some people, Department of Tourism, will be giving us some people to go to these areas. We will be getting an input from the department in the province, from the department in the province. Fortunately, tourism in the province is taken care of by the very minister who is doing environmental affairs, economic development, and tourism. So, I think we'll learn a lot. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the rest of the questions can be responded to by you and then and Jerry.
I don't have time to interview. No, it's fine. Madam Chair, I just want to ask the program with oversight. We've received it in hard copy format. So the logistical arrangements, when will we receive those details in terms of flight, the departure times and all those things, so that we can just plan accordingly?
That's why I'm saying this committee assistant is working on that.
So as soon as some questions, if the questions are asked to the committee members, who is the committee assistant in this case? I may be wrong, he's actually from KwaZulu-Natal. So, are you also? Okay. Good. Well then, as you know, Chair, we would normally fly back to our constituencies on a Friday night after the committee meeting. Today is exactly the same as what it would be on the 11th, right? Of September. So we fly back normally on the Friday. We are together on Sunday night, but presumably then the other members that fly into Durban would get picked up, I would have thought, and then taken to Richards Bay while we fly into Richards Bay.
No. Fly to
the
airport, take it, then take it from
Richards
Bay.
Okay. So for you, I, and anyone...
The house, go to the airport?
Yes.
And then move on with the community.
All right. I think it's just a question of coordinating the... People who are living in KZN would then have to drive down from their constituency to KSIA to meet the shuttle bus jury, and then if I could just order that to the committee members. So I won't need a ticket on Sunday if I really be there on Friday. I won't need a portfolio committee ticket because I'll use my normal travelling supplement to go back on Friday, but then I'll have to drive down to the airport on Sunday to meet the shuttle.
So for that reason, it's very important for me to get the program electronically together with the letter to the director general so that we can finalize all the arrangements.
Thanks. We have noted what the members are saying. Then the other aspect that I want to draw the attention of the members to is that we have also received an advice from the logistical team that it seems to them, and they have checked this with the travel agent, and the agent has agreed that it's possible that other members who are from other provinces, they can fly to Johannesburg and connect from Joburg straight to Richards Bay. Now, what we wanted now just to check is that the coordination of our members who are in KZN, yourself, Chair Honorable Krumbok, Honorable Bekolo, and Honorable Bekwa, I will check with those four members how really can we formalize their travel. Otherwise, for other members, is London or Liverpool and so on, a Cape Town can just fly straight to Johannesburg and in Joburg connect. Joburg straight to each other. Yes, so that's something. When we were drafting the program, we were not aware, but it was brought to our hands. And so it looks as if it's a quite a sensible arrangement. So we have accepted it. Yes, you will fly to Joburg and connect in Joburg to each other. No, there's no flight. So what we wanted to do?
When there was Uzo demand? No, it's okay.
So what we would just need to check from the members now is how many members will be available so that we can at least finalize our registration today and tomorrow, and then by Monday at least we can send the members their traveling arrangements. That's the only thing that we require from members now. The transport people, they will do with us throughout the day.
I am saying, is transport going to be available from Rita Bay? If people are flying to Rita Bay,
yes. Transport
is available from Rita Bay.
Yes,
and when members are coming back to Cape Town
and
wherever, they'll fly from
Rita Bay. No, we will, as we are working, sir, we will be going coming towards Devon. Then on a Friday, we fly from Devon to King Saga to our various destination back home. East Academy.
I think you're right.